Hi, I'm Johan.
And I'm Samuel, and you are listening to the Value Paths Podcast. Today's episode is all about managing churn in a self-serve SaaS company. And I'm pretty excited to talk about this one for a bunch of different reasons. But one of the biggest that stands out to me is just the concept of managing churn, period. Where in a self-serve environment, a lot of times people are concerned that self-serve revenue is higher churn revenue, which is true, but it comes with its own challenges and opportunities, as we've outlined in a previous episode. And we can get into the reasons why churn might be higher in a self-serve type business rather than, say, enterprise sales-driven SaaS. But I think that when you're looking at self-serve as a business model, what you're really looking at is low ARPA, ARPA being average revenue per account. So you're not making a lot of money per subscription, but you are making up for that in volume because you're targeting a much wider market that has, if you're going after small businesses instead of Fortune 500 companies, there are way, way, way more small businesses out there than Fortune 500 companies. And when you're dealing with that kind of volume, it gives you a much faster and more involved feedback loop on where your churn is coming from and how to go about improving it. I think a lot of companies look at their churn rate as their Trustpilot score or something, where it's basically just a reflection of their marketing efforts times how desirable their product's feature set is. And to us, we look at churn as something where you can very much put your finger on the scale. And when you're operating in a self-serve type context, there is a lot of opportunity to get scientific and therefore get quite actionable in actively bringing those numbers up.
Absolutely. I think that was very well put, Samuel.
Oh, thank you.
It's especially important in a self-serve context not to see churn as a byproduct, because it's one of the levers at your disposal when it comes to learning about what makes the self-serve system work and making it operate more efficiently.
Agreed.
So let's dive into how to manage churn for self-serve SaaS.
Where do we begin, Johan?
I think a good place to begin is to talk about what looking at churn as a byproduct means. So we begin with describing the current approach to churn before we dive into talking about how our approach is different.
Okay.
Okay. So if you're looking at churn as a byproduct, then you are thinking of it in broad terms as the number of customers or the amount of revenue that is leaving your company each month. So then one, you're considering it as an aggregate across the customer base. And two, it is taking the form of a particular rate per month. It's a fixed monthly number that you check in with from time to time. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I would say an executive health metric, financially speaking, is what comes to mind. Although I guess it's also worth mentioning at some point, probably sooner rather than later, that we could also be referring to logo churn rather than revenue churn. So revenue churn is how much money are you losing by people canceling their subscriptions? Whereas logo churn is how many people are you losing from them canceling their subscriptions? You could be experiencing a lot of people on cheap plans churning out, but not pulling a ton of revenue out of your current MRR, for example, or vice versa.
One of the big consequences of the typical approach to churn is that churn becomes this output metric. So it's not something you can directly control. There are other things you control. And if you do later on downstream, you see changes to churn. But churn is not something that you can actively steer. And that's something we strongly believe that you can do. You can steer it.
If you look at it in a different way.
Right. So let's talk about how we look at it.
So I would say the biggest difference from our perspective is, as you alluded to earlier, if you're looking at churn as just your Trustpilot score byproduct of how good your features are, etc., then you're taking all of your current existing subscriptions, and of that whole set, of which some people might have signed up 5 years ago, a couple other people might be their very first month that they're subscribers. You're taking your entire base of customers and you're measuring how much revenue that entire customer base is churning out from 1 month to the next, or from 1 quarter to the next, depending on what you're measuring it for. And what we're advocating for is to think of each batch of new revenue that you bring in a given month as its own cohort, and measure the churn from 1 month to the next, to the next, to the next for that particular cohort, and see how that compares to other months' new revenue batch cohorts. And so instead of looking at everything combined together and just saying, well, if we look at the money that we would have been making from subscriptions if people hadn't canceled, it's 3% of what our overall MRR is, so that's what our churn is this month. Like, yeah, technically, but maybe you're churning a lot of people out who signed up 3 years ago, or maybe you had a giant promotion 2 years ago and a bunch of those people just churned out because they were up for annual renewal, or something along those lines. What you really want to be looking at, in our opinion, is not what is the behavior of our entire customer base, but really what is the behavior of the new customers who we're bringing in. And ideally, are their economic behaviors, in the sense of producing lifetime value for your company, are those behaviors taking place more and more impactfully? Is the new revenue that we're bringing in on track to produce as good or better lifetime value than the past revenue that we were bringing in? And ultimately, looking at the drop-off of, let's say we look at the new customers from 6 months ago. If we look at how many of those customers renewed in month two, 5 months ago, there's going to be a particular drop-off. We look at how many people renewed in month three, which was 4 months ago, there's going to be another drop-off. We can observe the churn within the context of that particular cohort. And generally speaking, especially when we're talking about doing self-serve, which is theoretically higher churn, but also at a higher volume, you're going to have a lot of data coming in that lets you know whether your month two churn rate, month three churn rate, et cetera, is improving or not from one cohort to the next, rather than looking at, is your churn rate across your literal entire customer base changing from 1 month or 1 quarter to the next? And when you look at it that way, you get a much faster feedback loop around what kind of impact the different changes that you're putting in place might be having. Because like, if you wait around, if you want to implement something to improve churn, and you're looking at it in the aggregate, and the churn rate across 6 years worth of customers, it's going to take a really, 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 like an impossibly long time for you to find out if your efforts have really moved the needle regarding churn at all, because it's a big summary macro trend kind of a number.
Okay. So the two concepts to tease apart here are, one, cohort analysis will answer the question of who is churning at a granular level. So rather than look at your entire churn for your entire customer base, you're looking at a particular cohort of users and that particular cohort's drop off from month to month. And the second concept here is that if you're looking at different cohorts over time, then you can tease out patterns from cohort to cohort rather than the churn trend of the entire customer base, which doesn't give you any insight.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you could make an argument, not that you don't want to pay attention to any kind of data, but if you had to choose between tracking your month two renewal rate / month two churn rate versus your overall customer-wide churn rate, if I was an investor or if I was trying to value a company, I would be as interested, if not more, in what the month two churn rate trend is. If you brought in new customers 6 months ago and they churned at a particular rate in month two, What about the new customers you brought in 5 months ago or the new customers you brought in 4 months ago? What was their month true churn rate? And if is that number heading in a direction that inspires confidence?
Right. Are your newer cohorts doing better than your older ones? So what have we covered so far? We've covered the standard way to look at churn and one big way that our approach is different, which is to break your customer base out into cohorts and look at how those cohorts are churning out.
Yep. And when you do pay attention to, I guess, what we could call cohort churn, like within a given batch of customers, how many renew in month two, how many renew in month three, month four, month five, etc. When you measure churn that way within the cohort and you compare those cohorts to each other, a lot of times you'll see a pattern emerge. A lot of times, especially in self-serve SaaS, what you'll see is that there's a steeper amount of churn at the beginning where people are maybe not super committed. Maybe they converted because their trial lapsed, but they didn't really actually want to become customers, etc. And then eventually over time, you ideally want to see that churn start to plane out, ideally approach zero as much as possible. And so when you zoom back and you look at what I guess we could call meta churn or the full customer wide churn, a lot of that is disproportionately driven by newer customers rather than older customers, because your older customers are generally a little bit more locked in and a little bit more churn proof. This is true for any subscription business, but I think it's especially true for self-serve. And again, even though it sounds like it's a drawback or a flaw in the business model, to me, it's more of an opportunity where you can say, there's a lot of churn that's happening up front, and that is really going to affect the lifetime value of this given cohort of new customers. Because if we lose people in month two, it's not like they're just going to come back in month three for any reason. Once they're gone, they're pretty much gone. And so if we can have a tight feedback loop in place that tries to bring our month two, month three churn numbers up, we'll learn a lot faster than if we're trying to improve aggregate churn. And we'll also have a handle on the area where our churn is the worst, even if that's being obfuscated by looking at it in the macro view.
Right. The cohort-based churn trend for, say, month two is what enables this feedback loop. If you make a change that impacts month two churn, then you can see that reflected in the churn trend. And the big benefit of that is that you will be impacting not just the particular cohort, but all of the cohorts that follow.
Yep. I'm in favor of doing things that help make it less likely that people churn out at the end of their life cycle. But it's really the beginning of their life cycle where we see the most action and opportunity, and where we see most companies really overlooking that part.
Right. Because if you're looking at churn in aggregate, you don't know what the difference is between your upfront churn versus your later on churn. So we've covered time-based cohorts when it comes to looking at churn. But there are other ways to segment your customer base as well. And the different ways that you segment your customer base could help surface different insights for how to impact churn, particularly that starting period where churn is the worst. Some obvious segments that come to mind are looking at churn based on plan or based on payment method.
Payment method being like credit card versus ACH?
Or if it's B2B self-serve SaaS, then company credit card versus their personal credit card. There are different ways to slice and dice the people that are leaving you to find out which kind of users stick around for longer than others, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, so if you're trying to figure out the reasons that cause some people to stick around for longer than others, here's where it can get really interesting with segments. If you can segment users by how much revenue they've produced before they churned out, or what they did in the product before they churned out, then you can use that information to build up a theory about why they left at the point in time in which they did. So if the churn trend shows you that a lot of people are dropping off at month three, if you can give them an exit survey that works that information into it, that says you were able to accomplish so much in 2 months, what happened in month three that got in the way of your progress, then using that information can make better decisions about how to move the churn trend in a positive direction.
So you're recommending that people have dynamic exit surveys that are based off of user behavior?
Yeah. So if you think of users as being on a timeline, not just of getting to value, but then getting to recurring value month over month by performing a series of different actions, then you want to get granular data about what the blockers in that timeline might be, right? And if you can ask them timeline-based questions in an exit survey at a particular point in the timeline when they've left, you could get some of those insights.
How is that different from just asking a normal question, though?
A normal question would be something like, can you tell us why you left? This would just be a more specific question. Like, we saw that you set up A, B, and C. What got in the way of setting up the next thing, D?
And you're saying you would prioritize that feedback over generic feedback in your product strategy?
If you find that a large number of people who churn in month two, for example, are churning because they haven't been able to figure out something important that you only encounter when you're in that part of the timeline.
So somebody could be asking the same question to everybody who churns, but then you would just be filtering the responses only by people who churned after their first month. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. You could do it in stages, actually. So you could ask the generic question to everyone and then filter by month and see what patterns emerge. And based on which patterns emerge, you could ask more specific questions with your exit surveys going forward for drop off at particular times or after particular behaviors.
All right. Yeah. And not specific to the churn event itself, but if you can identify the customers who do churn after just the very first month, another thing to think about would be seeing what kind of customer support tickets they might have posted.
Right. We're looking for patterns here.
And I liked what you mentioned earlier regarding being able to segment churn between different characteristics of accounts. For example, if you are, let's say that you offer two different plans, you have a $100 plan and a $400 a month plan. Those plans are going to be churning at different rates. And especially, oh boy, if you think we're getting overly complicated talking about churn, just wait until we have our episode about LTV. But if you're thinking about the lifetime value that a new customer is bringing in, and you know that they're either paying you $100 a month or $400 a month, you can infer particular things about what their churn behavior will be, especially as a group, especially as a time-based group that you can observe the trends over time by comparing one to another to another. And so what you ideally want to be knowing is maybe, for example, your $400 a month plan, even though that's making so much more money on the surface, maybe its churn is just so much worse that you're actually getting a higher lifetime value out of the people who sign up for your $100 a month plan. And those people are probably easier to convert too, so on and so forth. So not to say that you should be making any bold decisions about pricing or plans or positioning or anything along those lines, but having this information is significantly more helpful than flying blind, which is ultimately what you're doing if all you're really looking at is net churn and maybe those sort of semi-opaque. It shows what your churn or retention is based off of different cohorts. So you could have your May customers, June customers, July customers, etc. And then everything starts out like dark blue. And then for some of them, they're like a little bit lighter blue than the other ones by the time you get to month two.
Right, right. You're talking about the cohort-based retention analysis chart that is typically available in SaaS analytics tools.
Right. And so if you're just looking at it in terms of percentages, like, the July cohort is kind of a robin's egg blue this month. That to me would be the equivalent of flying blind. That's not looking at it and saying, what's our month two retention / churn for our $100 month plan versus our $400 month plan? And how does that affect our ability to tell when we're going to have our cost of acquisition paid off, for example? And going back to the idea of having your new customers pay themselves off, because it always takes an investment up front to be able to get new customers. A lot of times that's called CAC, C-A-C, which is cost of acquiring a customer. The concept is basically that whenever you're bringing in new customers, they're not immediately profitable. And especially when you're looking at the economics of a subscription-based business model, the subscriptions that you're bringing in are especially not immediately profitable. If, for example, let's just use a real world example, you have a $30 a month magazine. That's probably a really expensive magazine. Let's say it's a $15 a month magazine. The amount of money that that magazine company spent to acquire their new magazine subscriber is more than $15. And they are betting that that subscriber is going to continue sticking around month after month after month to pay off the quote unquote debt that is incurred by the company in investing to acquire them. And especially like in the case of a magazine subscription, that's probably another similar thing, kind of self-servey, where you're probably expecting churn to be higher than if you're working in an enterprise environment with 3-year long contracts or things along those lines. And really what you're thinking is that there are going to be people who cancel after month one, people who cancel after month two, cancel after month three. And as a company, you're just going to eat that because you're hoping that people will stick around for 4 months, 10 months, 40 months, and that those people are going to pay so much more than it costs to acquire them that not only will it produce profit for you, but it's also going to offset the expenses that you lost on the people who only stuck around for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, whatever that might be. And okay. So in a similar way, when you're looking at what's called in industry terms, CAC payback period, how long does it take for your new customers to at least just reach break even, where they've paid off the amount that it costs for you to acquire them? That's also really affected by churn, and especially early churn. So if right. Your month two or month three churn is terrible, but your overall customer-wide churn isn't too bad, well, good news is that your overall churn isn't too bad, but your bad news is that your way of bringing in new revenue is going to be hard to scale, because for every 10 people you bring in, you're losing an outsized number of them before they even have a chance to give you their money back. And it's weird to me. I mean, this isn't the CAC payback episode, but it is weird to me that the formula for CAC payback period is, I mean, most often I see it as being CAC, which is its own calculation of marketing and acquisition expenses divided by number of new customers, divided by average revenue per account, which is, I mean, again, you're averaging out every customer in your customer base. That's not reflecting the actual, even the plans and pricing of the new customers that you're bringing in necessarily. And if you're just taking, let's say your ARPA is $50, just a nice round number, and your cost of acquiring somebody is $300, then that would mean that you have a 6-month CAC payback period. But you don't really, because for a number of reasons, like you're using giant averages and all the stuff that I was just vaguely gesturing toward, but also because you know that you're going to be losing those customers along the way. And so it's not like you can just say, well, we got 100 new customers who are paying us $50 a month and it costs $300 per customer. So in 6 months, we're going to be in the free and clear, because you're losing customers in month two and month three and month four. And that's eating into your CAC payback and extending the payback period even further out. And it's very strange to me that the majority of the CAC payback formulas that I have come across do not even consider the fact that people will be churning out as the cohort is paying itself off.
It's the problem of abstraction all over again. So You're not paying attention to the reality of what's actually happening with a customer or a group of customers. Instead, when you treat the customer base as a whole, whether it's with churn or whether it's with CAC payback period, what you're creating is a model that tells you about the health of the entire group, but doesn't give you any more granular insight than that. And that's essentially what we mean when we say flying blind. You don't have a realistic understanding of what's happening or where things in your company are headed.
If you're measuring CAC payback period by taking everybody in your customer base and averaging out how much, if you take all of the revenue from all of your customers and divide by the number of customers, that's average revenue per account. And if you take all of the money that you're spending to acquire new customers and divide it by however many new customers you're acquiring, then that's CAC. And if you take those two numbers and just divide one by the other and assume that that's going to represent how long it takes for you to earn your money back, it's just not realistic. You're just using cartoon numbers instead of just counting receipts and using actual real information. So eat your vegetables, people.
It is hard to look at these numbers and get that reality check. Looking at it in aggregate is kind of like taking an easy way out, because if you look at your entire customer base as a whole, you can ride the wave of your past glory, assuming, of course, that you had good days in the past. If you did, then the good days of the past can make the bad days of the present look less bad than they actually are.
I wouldn't say that's the easy way. I think that's the hard way, because you don't have the newer, more accurate information to work off of, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess you could say blissful ignorance or whatever, but I wouldn't want to be in that person's shoes necessarily either.
Right. Long term, sooner or later, you're going to have to face the facts. Okay, so let's wrap things up. What does it mean to manage churn for a self-serve SaaS company? Essentially, you don't look at churn as an aggregate. Instead, you manage it by answering questions like, who is leaving? When specifically are they leaving? And why? You take an approach to churn that is based on time-based cohorts. And over and above that, you can segment by plan, payment method, or even user behavior. When you're looking at time-based cohorts, you can track trends for each cohort in the customer lifecycle, whether that's month 2 churn over time or month 3 churn over time. You can look at how newer cohorts are doing in the customer lifecycle that everybody experiences as compared to the cohorts that came before them. Once you have that in place, you can start to form patterns as to why, whether that information is coming from customer support tickets or specific exit surveys that you've put together based on the patterns that you're seeing from the time-based cohorts. Once you have an idea of why people are leaving, you can start moving churn in a more positive direction.
All right, so that's churn in self-serve SaaS in a nutshell.
Thanks for listening in. You can join the discussion at selfservesaas.com, and we will see you next time.